Welcome to Whistleblower Network News. I am your host, Jane Turner, FBI whistleblower and advocate. It is our honor to share with you these experiences of real-life heroes and people of integrity. We are so delighted today to have Mzukisi Makatse. Mzukisi refused to sign off on a grant he flagged for potential corruption at the National Lotteries Commission and lost his job in retaliation. The commission administers funds generated by the National Lottery and disperses grants worth about $50 million United States dollars annually to worthy charities. Shortly before he was appointed, a new law gave the board discretionary powers to award grants to charities that had not applied for them. Mzukisi soon realized that this supposed proactive funding mechanism was a way of repurposing the lotto for large-scale looting. These included funds allegedly diverted to buy luxury homes and cars for board members. The grant was for a for-profit music festival and was paid out in the days following his dismissal. Mzukisi wanted to make an example of this case to blow open what he believed was a much wider web of corruption enabled by the new funding policy. Instead, he lost his job, his home, and his car, and almost lost his family. Blueprint for Free Speech recognized him with their whistleblowing prize in 2023, and we are thrilled to have him on the podcast today. Welcome, Mzukisi. It's a pleasure to have you on Whistleblower of the Week. Welcome to Whistleblower of the Week, and tell us about your time at the National Lottery Commission and the behavior you saw from the leadership.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen, for having me. It's quite a very, very important story if we are to ensure that the plight of the whistleblowers is known out there. I know there are countless other whistleblowers who have experienced quite similar experiences, you know, retaliation when they drew attention, you know, to a whole lot of corrupt activities that are taking place within different institutions. But with my case specifically, I had been employed with the National Lotteries Commission since March of 2017. And by August, I had already realized that there was quite a massive corruption that was taking place within the organization. How the systems were repurposed by the then executive to ensure that everyone who's beneath that executive do as they say without question, and thus pushing through payments that were irregular, that were not supposedly to be paid to organizations that were not qualifying. Therefore, by August, I had realized this. And the law, as I properly saying it, there had been repurposed as well, the legislation, to serve this interest by inserting an amendment in the National Lotteries Act, which allowed the executive and the board to identify certain worthy causes after thorough research, to fund without those organizations submitting any application. Therefore, this became a way of funding organizations that had just been started and organizations that had been hijacked by certain interests outside and within the organization. And by August, I had one case that came before me for approval, legal approval of about over 6 million rands. And when I looked at the project, I found it to be not compliant, because the project, which is the music festival that takes place in the Eastern Cape, annually had been funded the previous year. And by law, if you were funded this year, you cannot be funded the following year because we are taken to be in a cooling off period. You can only be funded the other year after next. So I flagged this and I accordingly reported to my superiors to say this cannot be approved by me because it will be wrong and it will be irregular because this organization had been funded the previous year and it can be funded again this year. So when I reported this to my supervisor, she insisted on me paying out this project or approving legally this project, but I refused because legally I couldn't. And then she escalated the matter to superiors that are sitting at the head office in Pretoria, and they also insisted that I pay or I approve this payment legally, say out this or approve this payment legally. But I still refused to do that because I felt it would not be right. Number one, number two, it was illegal. Number three, it was irregular.
Right.
And as an attorney who's an official of the court, it would have led to legal consequences for me, but ethically and morally, it was just not right and it was wrong. So when I refused these officials' instructions, the following day I received a letter of suspension that was signed by the national commissioner, who had never seen me before, who was sitting at the head office, but had signed this suspension letter the very next day of my refusal to approve this legal payment. And then I was told to leave office immediately, and security had to front march me out of the building to ensure that I had nothing that I took from the office, and I left all the equipment that belonged to the office and only took my bag. And security on tow, I was chucked out of the office, and that was the last time I set foot in the National Lotteries Commission. So I got suspended as a result, and a disciplinary hearing was organized, which was quite a sham because even the chairperson of that disciplinary hearing clearly had an instruction to make sure that I was dismissed. I was not allowed to cross-examine witnesses. The chairperson was so protective of the staff of the National Lotteries Commission. So it was quite a shame. And unfortunately, by the following year, 2018 February, before the disciplinary hearing could complete, I was dismissed. I received a letter terminating my contract. And that was the end of it in as far as my employment was concerned. I had already taken a decision that if I could not get anyone to listen to my concerns internally, then I would make sure that the whole issue is blown into the public so that everyone could know what was happening within the National Lotteries Commission. I mean, there was a whole process within the country that was taking place at the time, of the commission on the state capture, which was led by one judge, Zondo, who's the current chief justice of our country. And I tried to bring this to their attention, but apparently they didn't take this seriously because they were more concerned about the bigger organizations like your ESCOM, your PRASA, and other bigger organizations, Transnet. So they didn't really take this seriously because I was trying to show them that there was another area that they need to focus on. This organization is in deep trouble because people seem to have taken it over for their own selfish interests. Mm. But that didn't really go anywhere. So I had to involve the media to make sure that this gets out, and more information then came out in terms of what was happening. And steadily, and with the resolve, that we had, I made sure that throughout these years, whatever information that the media needed to expose this was provided. Connected the media to other whistleblowers within the National Lotteries Commission that were scared of coming out,
Yes.
So, evidentially, they were able to also provide the information to the media, especially to one Mr. Ray Joseph of the Ground Up news media site. He played quite a very important role working with me and other whistleblowers from within the National Lotteries Commission. So I'm saying, in a nutshell, that's really what transpired. You know, when one lost his job, I obviously, you know, couldn't pay my rentals. I had to lose the, you know, my place of abode. I lost my car. I had no place literally to stay. One time I had to stay in a warehouse in an industrial area because this warehouse had a security room where someone could sleep there. It had no ventilation. So I had to, you know, go and stay in that industrial area for over a year. So it was a very difficult period. My relationship suffered, my kids suffered. I couldn't pay their school fees. I couldn't maintain their welfare. They solely dependent on the mother. Slowly, I started to open up a legal firm to try and make sure that I have something I can rely on. And just before it could, you know, take off, the legal firm, and COVID came, and everything got closed down, and the firm suffered. And it was difficult after that. I couldn't be able to, you know, run the firm after the COVID. It took me until last year, around June, to get another license for me to be able to continue with the legal firm. So it's still early days with the legal firm, because it's quite difficult, you know, even getting an office space. It's still a struggle because to maintain an office, you have to make sure that you pay rentals. You have to make sure that you've got someone that is going to look after the office and pay them. So it's still quite a struggle. So the effects of what happened then, you know, they are still felt even today in terms of how my life has shaped up after what happened. But what's important now is that, you know, somehow things have changed. There is a new executive at the National Lotteries Commission. There is a new board. And they are willing to talk to us. They are willing to share with us in terms of what are the changes that are coming, you know, and what changes are they putting in place, and what reparations they can be able to provide to those of us that suffered throughout this period. So we are still hopeful and waiting that there will be reparations that will be, you know, paid out to us, so that we can salvage our lives, you know, from the whole damage that was caused by us coming out and telling the public about the scourge of corruption that was taking place within that organization.
Mr. Amakatse, I applaud you being a person of integrity, and I applaud the courage it took for you to do it. It appears that South Africa had this huge lottery, which was run, of course, by the state, correct? And there was corruption, it sounds like, endemic, and people were skimming off the funds and using it for their own personal. And you, first of all, went inside with your complaints, right, inside the lottery, and voiced the complaints. And then the result of that is they laid you off immediately?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
It
was it was a very, you know, vindictive type of management that was there, you know, to protect them. I mean, I understood that they would do anything to protect their interests, you know, those that were involved in the corrupt schemes that was taking place. Because this was a well-orchestrated scheme, I can tell you that, because it repurposed the entire organization from top down, you know, to make sure that the system operates in a very, you know, smooth, but in a very corrupt way. Smooth in the sense that even the Auditor General, when they came in, they wouldn't even detect these abnormalities, these irregularities. You know, the National Lotteries Commission would get clean audits year in, year out, even though there was this huge, you know, corrupt scheme that was taking place within the organization. So they were able to manipulate the system to that extent. So it was a very, very, you know, elaborate scheme that they had there. It was quite elaborate. So you can imagine they had that huge power because of the manipulation of the system. If one person then starts to speak up, it was very easy for them to just chuck them out of the system, hoping that that would be the end of the issue.
Yes.
Unfortunately, they didn't really know me at the time because I had only about 5 months in the job, and I had been in the public service for many, many years before that. And I had been a very committed public service, you know, who has been an activist as well outside of work, who's committed to a clean governance, you know, making sure that justice is always done and it always seems to be done, especially for the poor of our country. So
yes.
I made it a point that it won't end at my dismissal, that the matter will continue to be raised, you know, and get the public attention. And it has recently really, you know, gotten that public traction. And people are starting really to see now, indeed, you know, huge sums of money were stolen from within the National Accounts Commission. I'm talking big monies that should have eradicated a lot of, you know, social ills that we have in this country, quite a lot of poverty that is within our communities. You know, the organizations that the National Lotteries Commission funds, you know, help a lot in the communities where they are based, you know, to try and ensure that, you know, at least at the base level, people, they do not fall below poverty line, were able to cushion them through this organization by funding these organizations. So to divert such funds to private interests of corrupt individuals was something that one could not really stand. And at any given moment, one will continue to do that to make sure that funds meant to eradicate poverty and to ensure that people develop and they get jobs, they go to exactly that intended purpose.
Very impressive, because it sounds like there was a lot of people who had their noses in the trough, right? Like pigs grunting at eating. And you were the individual who stood up and said, this is wrong. Were you the only one at the commission, lottery commission, that did that? Did anybody else stand up with you, or were you standing there alone?
Yes, at the beginning, I was the first and the only person who stood up to what was happening and who blew it out into the open and consistently, you know, faced the whole barrage of attacks on the then management, you know, that was busy vilifying my character, vilifying my professional standing, my integrity. But I stood my ground. And with time, other people, they started to join in, you know, from within anonymously. They started to provide information to the media because they could as well, you know, take cue from what I was doing. But I think there was one person who later on came out as well by the name of Selo Qhina. Mr. Selo Qhina also suffered the same fate long after I've been dismissed as well. He was also dismissed, and he's you know, still suffering the same consequences that I suffered. He's a very strong person that I know. He's a very strong person of integrity. He's a Christian. He's well committed to his Christian values, and he was able to also, you know, stand up to what was happening and reported big schemes that were taking place in the Northern Cape of this country. So there were others that were anonymous as well, which I applaud for following the example that one set at the time that I did.
If you had not stepped forward, do you think anything would have been done? If it hadn't been for your courage to step forward and make that first entree into trying to expose the corruption, do you think anything would have happened if you hadn't done it?
What I found there when I got to the National Lotteries Commission was a an environment of fear that was created by the then management and the board. Anyone who said anything that was against the management would be dealt with in a very harsh fashion.
Yeah.
So there was this environment of fear that was there. People couldn't speak up. People were speaking in very harsh tones. And even in meetings, they would ratify whatever that was said by the management without question. And I was not familiar with that because I had been in the public service for quite, a number of years that I had never been, subjected to that. I was at the Department of Home Affairs before, and then I went to the Department of Justice, went to the Department of Education and Higher Education. I mean, I had never been subjected to that. So to me, it was unfamiliar territory, but it was something that was out of character, and that is why I had the courage of my own conviction to stand up to whatever that was wrong there. I knew that people wanted to voice their concerns, but they were scared, and I knew that they knew more than I did in terms of what was happening there, which is why, for instance, one of the then assistant managers in the Eastern Cape. When I spoke to him, he told me that even the legal department of the National Lotteries Commission had flagged this project as a corrupt project because it was a front that they used. They used a small organization from somewhere in the northwest of the country to try and get funding for a project that would take place in the Eastern Cape of this country. So that legal opinion from our legal department clearly stated that this is a front, it should not be approved for funding. As to how the powers that be were able to approve that funding is something to behold, because we had a clear information from this assistant manager that I have a legal opinion in my position. And he went on to testify even during my disciplinary hearing to say that indeed there is this legal opinion from our organization that says this project is a corrupt project. But no one was prepared to listen to that. The only interest was for me to be chucked out of the university, chucked out of the National Lotteries Commission by hook or crook. So that's what they did.
Unbelievable. And this cost you a lot, didn't it? I mean, I know, I think I hear children in the background somewhere. So you must have a family, a wife?
Oh, they are children from the neighborhood.
Okay.
It's a so, neighborhood. Yes.
Hi, we'll be right back with more of Whistleblower of the Week after a quick message from one of our whistleblower friends. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, this is Austin Handel, also known as Officer Ash on social media and as the Dunwoody Whistleblower and the Vice Chair of the Lamplighter Project. Leading whistleblower attorney Stephen Cohn's latest book, Rules for Whistleblowers, A Handbook for Doing What's Right, is the ultimate guide to blowing the whistle. Rules for Whistleblowers is an easy-to-read, essential tool for anyone curious about whistleblowing. The book lays out 35 rules to help whistleblowers navigate the complex and dangerous world of whistleblowing. Subscribers to the Whistleblower News Network can also receive 35% off a copy of this indispensable resource. Visit whistleblowersblog.org/rules for whistleblowers to learn more.
Do you have a family?
Well, I'm no longer with my family now. I had it. So it became very difficult to maintain the relationship after that. It was an on and off. I was depressed. And it affected her. She was also depressed because what they did at the National Lotteries Commission, they also went after my fiancé.
Yes.
To get to me, they went to her and they also suspended her for some time, accusing her of non-existent commissions or omissions, and she was pregnant with our last born at the time, and they put her on suspension. She almost went or lost the baby. She also went through a lot because they wanted to get to me and ensure that they punished me, but that I continued to do, because I continued to to propagate what was taking place within the National Authorities Commission, even after I had been dismissed. So the suffering was quite great. I mean, my reputation was in tatters, you know, even within my family, because my family, not everyone had gone to school or has gone to school within my family. So they will see the headline news talking about corruption within the National Lotteries Commission, and then my name in the same paragraph, and then they would conclude that I'm the one who was corrupt. In fact, that's what I was being accused of as well by the people from within the National Lotteries Commission. So when I got dismissed, it was like I was dismissed because I was corrupt. Something that really, you know, affected my professional standing, my family life. You know, so it was quite a very difficult period.
Yes, and I'm so sorry. Were you aware at the time that whistleblowers pay such a huge, you know, price, blowing the whistle, for telling the truth, for being a person of integrity? Did you have any other whistleblowers helping you or assisting you? Was there a framework in South Africa that stepped up to say you did a great job, or any support?
Sorry. At first, when I started coming up with the information, I really wasn't about blowing the whistle. For me, it was just exposing the facts. I didn't have, you know, the whole concept of whistleblowing in my mind at the time. I was just following the process and the procedure that I thought, you know, was the right procedure to follow, to first, you know, raise the issues within, and then where, you know, they fail, then I would then go outside and ensure that then, you know, I bring attention to what was happening from within. Then it later on dawned on me that, by the way, there is legislation in the country that deals with whistleblowing, which is the Protected Disclosures Act. And that Protected Disclosures Act clearly, you know, stipulates what process to be followed. And I had, you know, meticulously followed exactly what was contained, or what is contained in the Protected Disclosures Act. And without having really had this in me at the time I was doing all of this. So it then became an issue at a later stage that I am a whistleblower. I didn't set out to become one, you know, consciously, so to speak. So it really, you know, dawned on me at a later stage that, oh, by the way, there is this process that is also, you know, contained in our legislation. And there is a variety of legislation that we have in the country that deals with matters of protection of whistleblowers, you know, the labor laws, you know, environmental laws, the intelligence or financial intelligence laws. There's quite a variety of these laws, but they are disjointed, you know, they are not coordinated in such a way that they are effectively implemented to effectively protect whistleblowers or promote whistleblowing within the country. So it was then at a very later stage that I connected with other whistleblowers who then became aware of what was happening within the National Lotteries Commission, and then they set out to look out for me. And they connected me to a group of whistleblowers that support each other in various, you know, psychosocial ways. And one of the key members of that is Mr. John Clark. Mr. John Clark is a social worker by profession, and he has taken it upon himself to make sure that he supports whistleblowers, you know, emotionally, and try to ensure that he mobilizes other people in support of the whistleblowers. He's the person who's behind the whistleblower group that was formed, and where we interact with each other and you know, vent or tell our stories and try to support one another in the process. Otherwise, from the government side, I can tell you that there's nothing that comes as a tangible support to whistleblowers. It is only now that they are trying to look at the whole concept of whistleblowing regime in the country, and how we can be able to ensure that there is a proper system that supports and protects whistleblowers within South Africa. So the Department of Justice is currently, you know, in the process of looking at the entire legislative framework to ensure that we reform the entire whistleblowing regime in the country for the protection and support of the whistleblowing. I think that one is a very important step that the government is taking, because there's been a wave of support from the civil society, where government is being pressured to take steps tangibly and practically to make sure that whistleblowers are protected. We have had some of our whistleblowers being, you know, killed. One, Babita Diokorang, who was shot because he had exposed corruption within the Department of Health in the Gauteng province of this country, was brutally murdered by a group of individuals, and you know, it is then that the government started to see the importance of the protection and the support of whistleblowers. So we really are hopeful that going forward we are going to see new legislative changes, and we're going to see new institutions coming on board, established by the government, to try and ensure that this protection and support of whistleblowers does take place.
Excellent. I know John Clark. He's a friend of mine, and I admire him so much and what he's doing. I am so glad you've hooked up with him, because I deeply admire him. Yes, yes. So did your whistleblowing at the lottery, did that result in the commission that came later? Because I understand that there was a special commission, investigating unit, that looked into this. Was your whistleblowing responsible for that?
Well, because I'm the one who started to come out, and I'm the one who's been working with institutions like Roundup that had put pressure on the government to pay attention on what was happening within the National Lotteries Commission. Well, I can take a bit of credit from that. To say, had it not been, you know, my coming out, it had not been my working with the ground up, Mr. Ray Joseph, to expose what was happening within the National Lotteries Commission, the president wouldn't have taken this decision to appoint the SIU to look at what was happening and investigate. So indeed, one can take a bit of credit and I'm happy that the SIU is doing great work to try and get into, you know, the deeper, you know, tentacles of what was taking place within the National Lotteries Commission. I think they've just reported in Parliament about a month or so ago, or a few weeks back, about what is taking place now, where the investigations are, and you know, which prosecutions have been initiated, and how many cases have been referred to prosecutorial bodies. So it's quite great work. We're expecting more, of course. You know, we're expecting even a faster movement to ensure that evidence is not lost, that people are brought to book, either in terms of the civil or the criminal law. But we are hopeful that we will get there, because it's quite very, very important work that is being done by the SIU.
It's amazing. Almost all the whistleblowers I talk to, they say they didn't know they were a whistleblower. They were just trying to do the right thing, make things better. So you fall within that very admirable group. And I have to congratulate you on the change you have brought about. And is it clean today? Is the lottery system a clean system, or is there still problems?
I think it's work in progress, because now there is a new executive that has been appointed, which is led by Ms. Jodie Shorts. Ms. Jodie Shorts has a history of managing complex organizations, because the problem that we have in this country is that sometimes we've got managers that have no traceable successes in managing very complex organizations. And as a result, when they are unable to do what is their jobs, they tend to become very corrupt. And when they are confronted for their wrongdoings, they tend to take this very, you know, drastic action against those that question, you know, what they are doing. So these are, you know, weak individuals with power. But yes, now at least we have, you know, a very strong leadership now within the National Lotteries Commission. They've also appointed a new board which comprises of very credible individuals with very, you know, high integrity. So things are starting to move quite you know, drastically in terms of changing what has been happening there. I know, for instance, that they've instituted things like your integrity testing, lifestyle auditing of the employees within, so that people can explain where they got the wealth vis-a-vis the salaries that they are getting from within the National Lotteries Commission. And I also understand that in terms of systems of accountability, your audit systems, you know, the new management has even requested the Auditor General to give explanations on why they did not pick up these irregularities at the time that they were conducting auditing of the National Lotteries Commission and giving, you know, clean audits to the National Lotteries Commission despite the grand scheme of corruption that was taking place within the NLC. So there is that movement, and I have personally met with the commissioner, Ms. Jodie Short. She's a very open individual. She's a very skilled individual, a very, you know, committed public servant who understands complex organization or running of complex organizations. So we are really hopeful that things will be turned around, but it's a massive job that they have to do there, because the culture, you know, is quite endemic of you know, not understanding how a public entity should operate, you know. So there has to be quite a sea change in terms of systems. But she's up to task with the executive around and the board as well to guide the governance within that institution. So I'm really hopeful, because having met her and having seen what she has done already, it's quite huge work. It's going to take some time, but I think we will get there.
Well, as you know, corruption is not just endemic in South Africa; it's everywhere. But what is rare is individuals like you who step forward and put everything on the line. You lost your family. You lost your job. Would you do it again?
Oh, yes, without thinking twice, I would. And as I said, you know, understanding where we are coming from as a country, you know, and what ideals were there, for the country emerging from, you know, a system of apartheid and colonialism, you know, and wanting to build a better country for our people and a better life for, you know, the downtrodden of our people. That commitment is really, you know, informed by that particular history, because we have a very difficult history in this country. And it becomes a very disappointing, you know, phenomenon when we are going to have people embarking on such grand scale corruption, when we have so much poverty in this country, when we have not been able to eradicate this poverty even 30 years after, you know, our democratic breakthrough. So with those of us that were there in the trenches as young people of 10, 11 years old, who grew up, you know, fighting the system, wanting change, ensuring that, you know, our people can enjoy their rights, you know, they can be protected by the system. If what is happening now in the country is inimical to the ideals that we had when we took over this country, some of us are prepared to go, you know, to the longest lengths in ensuring that we bring the system, we bring our institutions back to our ideals of ensuring that we've got a functioning democracy. And you can only have a functioning democracy where justice is ensured, especially amongst, you know, the poor. Otherwise, you are living in a very, you know, precarious democratic state that can easily, you know, be destroyed, where people can easily take up arms or take up, you know, whatever, and stand up against what they see to be an injustice. So if you are going to have people that have no idea of what, you know, this is about, we really have to stand up. So I would do it again. I will do it again.
Well, that's because you're a hero. That's why you do it again. I would like to ask, so what are you doing today and what are your future plans?
Well, I'm currently running this small firm. As I said, I just received the license last year, by June last year, to continue running the firm. So I'm still, you know, building this law firm. The future is I think it's looking bright, because I'm in the process of trying to redesign it and remodel it into a more commercial commercial entity. So I'm just looking forward to get people that may come on board and partner with me in ensuring that we've got a very viable law firm. So that's what currently I'm busy doing, trying to get people to come on board, to invest in the firm, and make it a very successful legal entity.
You excited that we are forming our tribe? It's an international group. Have you seen this effort where internationally whistleblowers are trying to get together and kind of bring change about?
I'm very excited about it. I'm thrilled. You see, you know, because this system is quite connected. South Africa is part of the global community. You know, we've got big multinational companies that are within this country that operate across the globe. And if we are going to fight corruption internationally, then there has to be an international movement of whistleblowers that will be able to connect, to share experiences, and provide support to one another. I think that's very, very important. Because as a country, we are signatories to the United Nations, and the United Nations has a convention that deals with the, you know, prevention and of corruption, and as a signatory to that convention that we have ratified since 2004, so we are internationally committed to ensure that we fight corruption wherever it rears its ugly head. So I'm very excited to see that there is this now global movement of trying to make sure that, you know, countries, they start to have, you know, legislation that regulates, that supports, that protects whistleblowers individually in their own countries. So I think this is a very, very good movement. It has to be sustained, you know, and I think, you know, one way or the other, these webinars now that have made things possible can be able to connect the globe in sharing these experiences, you know, and give these talks about, you know, the importance of whistleblowing and the importance of making sure that whistleblowing is rooted amongst the people. Because there's a, you know, a historical lesson that I learned, which is that the only protection for whistleblowers is amongst the people. Because if people do not fear to expose the wrongdoing, anyone amongst them that exposes the wrongdoing will be protected by the people. So it's always, you know, good to ensure that you've got this movement rooted amongst the people, people understanding that it's not something, you know, that should elicit fear to expose the wrongdoing. Because we're coming from a period as a country, for instance, where whistleblowing at the time, it was called impimpi. If you are a whistleblower, you are called impimpi, and a very negative,
yes,
word, you know, to be associated with someone now who wants to expose the truth. So that culture where, you know, the impimpis were treated with suspicion and with, you know, viciousness because they were said to be collaborating with the then regime, it's something that really has to, you know, see being changed now, so that people understand that this is our own government, you know, democratically elected. These are our own institutions. You know, these are our own resources. Therefore, we need to make sure that we protect them. That's very, very important.
Very well said. Mr. Makatse, you are a person of integrity, a hero. You represent the very best that South Africa has to offer. I thank you for your time. I thank you for your truth. Would you like to end with any words?
Well, I could only thank you very much for, you know, platforms like what you have now, where whistleblowers are able to come and share experiences, because even those who would be whistleblowers can now see that at least there is a global movement that seeks to ensure that whistleblowing is promoted and whistleblowers are protected and supported. So thank you very much for the work that you do. And to all other whistleblowers across the globe, I would say, please continue doing the right thing. You know what is the right thing. It is always deep down within you to do the right thing. Let's just get the courage of our own conviction and do exactly what is right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. And please don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. If you want to read more whistleblower stories, go to www.whistleblowersblog.org. Music by Rachel Kilgore. Editing and booking by Anissa Shake and Victoria Thompson. And a special thanks to our sponsors, Whistleblower Network News.
When you're all grown up, I think you'll find that it's just as hard to stand up tall as it was when you were small. The truth is hard to say.